is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. Now, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you have any question or comment, why, we invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY at 464-8295. But please hold your calls until the half hour, because we have with us this evening Mr. Carl Lawrence. So we're going to be talking about his book, China. And, of course, my wife remembers Mr. Lawrence very well when he was with the Haven of Rest. He's traveled throughout the world extensively, and he's written a book on a number of subjects. One of them is Rwanda. I certainly want to get that book. But tonight we're going to be talking about his book on China. Mr. Lawrence, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm here, Stan.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so very much for coming on with us. And I'll tell you, this is a fascinating book and gives real insight into what's going on in China. But even more than that, perhaps it answers that unanswerable question, or apparently unanswerable question, why would God allow such terrible, terrible suffering to have come to the people of China? But let's hold that question off until later on, as you did in your book, because you answer that question really towards the very end of the book. Actually, of course, the book is based upon just stories told by the people in China. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about how you came to write the book?
Well, I lived in China. I lived in Hong Kong with the Far East Broadcasting Company in 1968. And I was the program director, and one of my responsibilities was 22 hours a day of broadcasting to China. And China, as you know, that was in the middle of the Cultural Revolution, and China was a closed country. So we got as close to China as we could to find out what we should be broadcasting. And in Hong Kong, there were refugees coming across that we could interview. And we could also go up on some high mountains and listen to some of the internal radio broadcasts in China. So I got a pretty good view of what was happening in China at that time. And it sort of stuck with me, I guess. So then I left, moved to the Philippines, where I was the program director for the whole network, but still with a great interest in China, and still, of course, I'm still responsible for the 22 hours a day plus several hundred other hours a day. And then I went into China in 1981 for the first time at the request of some members of the House Church, and have been in there many times since.
And, of course, you've had an opportunity to talk to so many of the people there. And in this wonderful, wonderful book, you just tell the story of a really unbelievable suffering, but unbelievable courage on the part of these people who are totally dedicated to the Lord.
Yes, and I think the book is very important now, because we are seeing now, I just heard Dr. Dobson and Chuck Colson and Dr. Horowitz back in Washington, and they're really bringing to the Americans' attention this whole concept of persecution. And I think that China is an excellent study in that. I'm a little, I don't think that Christians should be involved so much in politicizing persecution like that, you know. But I'm seeing more and more. I've been spending time in India and Africa and Russia, beginning to see persecution, I don't see any user-friendly churches out there except in the United States, and the difference between them and the churches out there are quite a bit different.
Well, I think that's an important, very important difference, because, you know, in America today, we've got a lot of churches where you get a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling, but I wonder how many people would really keep their Christian faith if they had to risk their lives, all of their possessions, and face terrible persecution or imprisonment for professing their belief in Jesus Christ. I wonder how many American Christians really have the vitality and dedication of the Chinese Christians.
Yeah, well, Americans have a hard time retaining their Christianity when they lose an election. So I don't know what they do if somebody came and knocked on the door and says, denounce Jesus Christ or die.
And that's really what they do in China.
Yeah,
and this has been going on, going all the way back into the late 1940s when the communists first came to power. Maybe we could just do a quick rundown on what happened in China, because I know you'd be right on top of this. It's my understanding that when the communists first came to power back in 1949, that there was a terrible period of persecution, not necessarily just of Christians, but an effort to totally destroy any resistance to communism. What was it? I've heard figures something like 30 to 60 or 80 million people executed at that time. Do you have any idea what the true figures are?
Well, we're beginning to get statistics now from people who went through these. There's still no statistics on how many generally, but there were a couple great movements in China. There was the Great Leap Forward, where he tried to put, you know, he was going to surpass, Mao was going to surpass Great Britain in economy, I think in a five-year period. Totally destroyed the economy, and is now considered and written up by Chinese historians as the greatest man-made disaster in all of history. And conservative figures by Chinese statisticians now are saying that 43 million people starved to death. And then you have your, now these are, you know, you can, these are statistics that are there. You can count on them. And then there was in 1968, 69, started in 66, the Cultural Revolution. This is where Mao turned the country over to the young people. And even now, they're beginning to say that conservative figures for that, these kids, 12 to 18, 19 years old, killed 19 million. So we're talking there about two movements. We're talking about 62 million.
Now, is that figure, the Great Leap Forward, was that in 59? When was that?
Yes, that was in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm. That was in the early 60s.
Yeah, okay. So we're not even counting what happened when he first took over.
Okay, fine. And the figures there, I've had somewhere, somewhere between 40 and 80 million. I don't know. I don't know that anybody really knows, other than there was terrible, terrible suffering and a massive butchery that dwarfs the human persecution and destruction of human life as existed anywhere else in the world. And, of course, most people are totally unconcerned. They're totally uninformed about these horrible, horrible atrocities as they've unfolded. And now, of course, we're told, oh, well, you know, things, China is our friend. In fact, Bill Clinton recently said that China is an ex-communist country. Well, of course, the Chinese communists don't know that, but mm-hmm. apparently Bill Clinton thinks he knows that.
Right.
And yet, one of the things you mentioned in your book was that in one province, because of the one-child policy in that which is being enforced, and certainly everybody wants to have a son, it was something like 29 boys to one girl?
Yes, because you have to understand in China, there's no Social Security, and it's a men's society still. And so to have a boy is tremendously important. So what they do is if you have a girl, usually a doctor will drown it for you for a small amount of money after the child's born. But now that they have the sonar, they know whether it's going to be a boy or a girl, then they have the abortion much earlier. But this is going to be a real problem if this keeps up. And it's in this one province, it's 29 men to one girl. And they're just letting the men live and not the girls. And you're going to have a pretty dominant male society.
Well, not only a dominant male society, but there'll be no new children.
No, there'll be no new children.
So, of course, one of the strengths of your book is you make the stories of the persecution of these Christian believers so really very real. And, you know, there have been literally, it would appear, almost millions who have been persecuted and killed for their faith.
Oh, yes.
And the communists fear Christianity. Now, it seems that there's almost an insatiable fear, or almost an unreal fear of the danger of Christianity.
You know, I found this time and time again, that when a Christian is faced by, say, a Marxist or someone who wants to, you know, really tear him apart, and when they just stand up and pronounce their faith in Jesus Christ, it really scares them to death. Not only in China, in Russia. I remember just before Ronald Reagan went to Moscow, I was over there in Moscow, and I interviewed a dissident who spent 19 years, I think it was, 9 years, in a Russian prison camp. And he refused to eat until they gave him back his Bible. Now, they could have gotten rid of Alexander Ogorodnikov, just one person. They could have taken him out and beaten him to death and thrown him in an unmarked grave. You'd never heard of him again. But his strength was in the fact that you cannot kill me until God tells you and gives you permission, basically. And he said to them, I will not eat until you bring my Bible back. And they force-fed him for 659 days. Then I interviewed him in Moscow, and his hands are paralyzed where they force-fed him with, the tubes and stuff. He held up his Bible, and he says, but after 659 days, they brought my Bible back. That was just for a Bible, but it wasn't really for a Bible. It was to show those people what he believed. And they were frightened of him. They really were. The irony is that this man now runs the soup kitchen right outside the KGB for former KGB agents.
And, of course, there's so many of the Chinese Christians who were simply told, you can go home from prison. All you have to do is renounce your faith.
That's exactly it.
That would have been such an easy thing to simply lie about it and say, all right, I'm no longer a Christian.
Right.
And keeping, of course, the secret in their hearts, but they wouldn't do it. And many of them were sent back to prison again and again and again.
Yes, and some were put in solitary confinement and were not allowed to speak for 17, 20 years.
And this was for the crime of being a Christian. And I thought one of the things that was pointed out so beautifully in your book was the fact that, of course, there is an official government church registered with the government.
Yes.
And, of course, that's all right. You can go to that church. You can't proselytize. You can't talk to any young person about Christianity because they don't want the young people to know about Christianity in China, just like they really don't want young children to know about Christianity in America today. That's why they've outlawed Christianity from our schools. I think it's fascinating now that you can have a prayer in Congress every morning, but you can't have it in American schools. Now, what sense does that make if there's a wall of separation between church and state, unless there is an anti-Christian agenda aimed at the youth in America, just as there was in China, where it was illegal to talk to any child younger than 18
right.
about Jesus Christ, just like we have. We don't have that law here. We just use the schools for that purpose.
You're right. It was interesting. I was in Beijing about 3-4 years ago, and this was after the Tiananmen Square, and I was with a student. And he said he was, a real Marxist. And this, of course, this should be, the pride of the country should be these university students. And he said that when we saw what happened at Tiananmen Square, and this is another example of, we thought it was a tragedy, and it was God's way of bringing literally thousands and thousands of young people to Christ. And he told me, he says, when that happened, when those tanks rolled over our friends, we realized the corruption of Marxism. And we had heard about Christianity through radio and other areas. So he says, I went back to the university campus, and he says, I had a professor there who I was pretty sure was probably a believer. And he was, and this professor led this young man to the Lord. And he says, he says, after Tiananmen Square, he says, overnight, he said, the books of Karl Marx and some of the American philosophers and stuff were replaced by Francis Schaeffer and Chuck Colson in their own language. But he said, the irony is, he says, is that I took a sociology class from this professor, and his textbook was the Bible. Now, this is on the university campus of Beijing. I live a couple blocks from Oregon State University. I don't think a professor here at Oregon State University could use the Bible as his textbook for a class in sociology. I don't think he'd keep his job.
Oh, they would attack him. I mean, our university campuses are really not used to educate, but to indoctrinate our young people in Marxism and hatred of God, hatred of America. I have a young man who works as a engineer on the station I do my afternoon programs on, and he tells me he goes over to Hartnell College here and takes this English class, and the English professor spends all this time talking about sociology and about how terrible white people are and how terrible our country is and how he stole the land from his ancestors 150 years ago. Apparently he's Mexican or Indian or something. But this is what they're indoctrinating our kids on in English.
Yes, right.
And of course, why are we spending our money to indoctrinate our young people in hatred of America and specifically in hatred of God? Fortunately, this young man's a Christian, and he said, if it weren't for his grade, and he'd just get up and tell the teacher just what he thinks. In fact, he's really afraid for his life because most of the students there happen to be the same ethnic origin as the instructor, and they're going right along with it.
Yes,
just
true.
Being turned against everything that's good and worthwhile and noble and valuable in our society. And yet you say that in China, some of the teachers actually have the courage to do what's right.
Well, honestly, it doesn't take... They did the courage before. They gave their lives. That's the 62 million we're talking about. These people are the beneficiaries of those courage of the 62 million. That professor can do that because a lot of kids died. That professor can do that because kids went down in Tiananmen Square and gave their life.
And so
there's a terrible price.
The Chinese government is backing away somewhat from the persecution of Christians.
It's not as difficult as it was, no. And I think, and the Chinese government basically is backed away from a lot of things that they thought they held sacred, because the Chinese made lousy Marxists. Chinese are born capitalists. And Marxism never took that out of them at all. And so they're still more capitalist than anybody I think realizes.
I know, and they're excellent businessmen.
Yes,
and
they are.
Certainly, they're the merchants all throughout Southeast Asia.
Yes,
and in fact, they're sort of hated by many of the other ethnic groups. They're called they're called the Jews of the Southeast because they're just nothing more than just a good businessmen, honest businessmen, hardworking businessmen, and of course, commerce is the very essence of society.
Yes,
and you take the Chinese or the entrepreneurs out of any society, and that society begins to crumble.
Right.
Same thing as you take the Jews out of there. They're excellent businessmen, and they make the society work. And that's why people are resentful of Jews. Why, in many parts of the Orient, or the Southeast Asia, they're resentful of the Chinese.
Oh, yes. The Vietnamese, when Vietnam fell, they made a terrible mistake. They cleared all the Chinese out and put them on boats. Most of the Chinese were boat people, and now they have no one to build their economy.
Right. Well, it's the tragedies that are befalling so much of the world today. But I thought that your analysis of, the question is raised over and over again. Why would a loving God allow these terrible things to happen? Of course, this is the question that's asked about the Holocaust in Europe. This is asked about the suffering of the Christians in Europe, because a little known factor, there's probably more Christians who died than Jews, according to Norman Cohn, who's a Jewish scholar who wrote a wonderful book about the Holocaust called War and for Genocide. He said there were about 12 million others besides the Jews who were slaughtered in the death camps. So an awful lot of people died who were not Jews, and many of them were Christians, Catholics, and Protestants. And people say, how do you explain the Holocaust? How do you explain these horrible, horrible things that have happened to China? And yet I think that your analysis of that is really so important. Would you want to just sort of give that to our listeners?
Well, basically, you go to Genesis. Man means it for evil, but God means it for good.
And, of course, that was what Joseph said
to his brothers. Yes, that's what Joseph said, right. And when his brothers came. But I saw in China, I saw God work out these plans. For instance, the great devil of China, and it certainly was, is Mao Zedong. But yet God used Mao to give us the greatest revival in history.
And you commented it's at least 80 million Christians, and they're not lukewarm Christians.
97 million.
97 million.
97.
Okay.
That figure comes from not long before I was there. The head of the house church was called to Beijing, and the head of religious affairs, who's an agnostic, by the way, and heads the Three Self Church Movement, People's Movement. He brought this man in from the house church, and he hit him on the desk. Says, "You people have to stop growing. There are 97 million of you."
Mm-hmm. 97 minutes.
And the reason that figure probably really galled the people in Beijing is that it's just twice the membership of the Communist Party.
Right.
So that was very important. But and again, there's a little definition here. In China, there are Christians and there are believers.
All right. Why don't you differentiate?
Okay, a Christian is a person who usually has a big nose and big eyes. In other words, he's a Westerner.
Okay.
It's cultural. And there are some Chinese that are Christians. But a believer is a person who has accepted the Lord Jesus Christ and lives the lifestyle dictated by the New Testament. And we're talking about 97 million believers. We're not talking about 97 million Christians. I'm sure there are a lot more Christians than that.
Okay, now, of course, there are some people who have the comfortable job. They belong to the Three Self Church, which
right.
is the official government church. And of course, you can do that as long as you don't ever profess your faith publicly and don't try to proselytize. And so that's sort of a... What about the people who belong to the Three Self Church? Are they Christians, or are they people who simply are paying homage to tradition?
No, the thing that is driving Beijing mad is that the Three Self Church basically, from its very beginning, has been loaded with believers. Let me give you an example. In 1982, I went to a church in Shanghai. Jimmy Carter had just been there and his wife, and he'd signed the guest book and heard the message. And those were the days when you went in, if you were a foreigner, then an interpreter would go in with you. And they would take you up to a special balcony and sit. So I had a friend from Singapore who was very fluent in the language, but he was Caucasian as well. And we went up and listened, and she sat between us, and she took out her little sheet of paper, and she gave me a message that this guy was preaching, both of us, about how Jesus Christ was a Marxist and all of this. And when we got out, my friend thought it was so funny. He said, this preacher gave a tremendous message on the importance of accepting Jesus Christ as your Savior today. And he told the people to go home and kneel and pray and accept Jesus. This gal sitting between us was reading the notes for that day's sermon, which was supposed to be used in all of the official government churches, but the pastor didn't use it. But she didn't care. She did her job. And I think you saw this quite a bit, because in the early days, the only pastors available, the only ones who survived, were the real believers. And they put those in charge of these Three Self Churches. Now, it is run by, in the top of it, the bishop and all of those people. Yes, they are. They're probably not even Christians. But I don't know what the percentage would be of the Three Self Church. But it, you're right, it is under the control of Beijing. And the great worry to China, of course, is the house church, not the official church. But I would say that probably three-quarters of the people in the official church also attend house church meetings. And they have taken upon themselves the Three Self Church as a project of evangelization.
And, of course, the house churches are really where the persecution fell.
Yes,
when
yes.
the government was trying to outlaw Christianity. And,
yeah, the Three Self Church was disbanded not long after Mao came into power and didn't come back again until Bishop Deng was put in the early 80s.
And, of course, the communists were always trying to track down where those terrible communists were meeting. Now, isn't there something in the Chinese Constitution that says, you know, there'll be no religious persecution, and then they just simply go ahead and persecute them?
Oh, yes, yes, but there's a lot of constitutions like that.
Yeah, well, in fact, we have provisions really that protect the right of Christianity. Christians are being persecuted all across America. I know
right.
I have report after report from across the country where they're being targeted, but there doesn't seem to be much outcry, not only from the media, but from the church itself.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, but in China, of course, the persecution there really has been just horrendous. And a lot of people have actually been killed simply for their faith.
Oh, millions. Absolutely millions.
Actually, millions of
yes.
Christians have been killed for their
oh,
faith.
Oh, yes.
Now,
yes.
were most of the people killed during the Cultural Revolution?
That was a large part of it, yes.
Right. Uh-huh.
That was the most vicious time of all. That's when the Red Guard was turned loose to cleanse the revolution.
Now, you say there were 19 million Christians killed or 19 million?
No, 19 million people killed during the Cultural Revolution.
Total, okay.
But, you know, if you only had, say, half of those were Christians, why, we're talking about 8 million people.
And, of course, a lot of that was, you could just be a college professor. You could, it didn't really matter. Anybody who was sort of in a position of authority was a fair game for the youth.
Yes, what he did, Mao did, is he turned the country over to them. They took over the railroads, they took over all the businesses. They would go into schools if they didn't like, to get a school teacher they didn't like, and they'd take him out and execute him right out behind the church, right out behind the school.
And you were telling the story that now in the local McDonald's there and one of the major cities, why the manager that's putting out the food in McDonald's was a former Red Guard leader.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and under some considerable pressure too. By the way, the people still have not forgiven the Red Guard. There are 120 million people. They're about 35, 40 years old now in China that were members of the Red Guard,
mm-hmm.
who are called the Lost Generation.
Now, why do they call them that?
Because they can't get jobs. People don't want them around. They didn't have any education. They quit college. They quit university for 4 or 5 years. Very similar to a very small segment of the American population that came out of the 60s.
I mean the hippie generation.
Yeah, the hippie generation. They're still there around the country.
But 125 million is an awful lot of people.
Yes, but when you get 1.2 billion, it doesn't show up as much.
I know it doesn't. Well, it is an amazing, amazing population, and yet, I understand that China is such a massive country that, although we think that this is overpopulated, is it really any more overpopulated than America is per square mile?
Well, no. It is on the coast area, yes. But the thing is that they're so organized. They don't require, like I'm sitting here doing this program, and I'm sitting in a room where probably 3 or 4 Chinese families would live, and that's their security. They want to live that way. And me and my wife live in this room, And so they have a different concept, and it's not good or bad. It's just a different concept that there's safety. I mean, you all sleep in the same room because that's the thing to do. That's what families do. And I think it has also played a role in holding the families together. See, Mao, in part of this Great Leap Forward, tried to break the families up. And it turned into a disaster, and he finally let them come back together again. He tried to put all the women to work and have the grandmothers raise the children, and sent all the men anywhere in the country to work in the farms and stuff. Tore the family apart, and this should be a good lesson for us.
Well,
and he tore the nation apart at the same time.
You told in your book about some of the almost supernatural miracles that are part of the tradition of Chinese Christianity, and it would appear that that Christianity under persecution sometimes does see miraculous healings and supernatural events, which are sort of would be scoffed at here in the United States, but have been reported down through the ages associated with Christian ministries and Christian missionaries.
We have in journalism, which is rarely used now, but it was taught, when I was a young man, called Dewey, Negative Canon of Agreement. This is Dewey the Educator.
Right.
And what you did in research is you put your problem right in the middle, and then you put an A on one side, and then a B, and then a C in the bottom, and a D over the other side. And these represented 4 people that did not know each other, but had seen or participated in an event. And you talk to them separately, and if they come up with about 90% of the same story, without knowing each other, without matching notes and stuff, that was considered to be a bona fide story. I mean, it would stand up anywhere. Well, that's what I used in China. I used Dewey's Negative Canon of Agreement because I knew that there were some stories that I'm sure were true, but I just couldn't find B or D, or something like that. But every story that's in this book has gone through Dewey's Negative Canon of Agreement, and I've had it verified. And you're right. I was very skeptical. There's a story in there, the woman who was raised from the dead. And when I told it, when the fellows told this to me, and he says, I know, you're from the West, and you're going to say, well, it rained and the soil got wet and it woke her up and she wasn't really dead. He says, that's all right. He says, I have no problem with that if that's what you want to believe. But I think the important thing that I saw in China was that it never, when something like this happened, God did it, first of all, to glorify the power of the church and of Jesus Christ. He never did it so that somebody could start a ministry of miracles or that somebody could start another denomination or something like that. And so when you talk to these people over there about miracles and things like this, they just say, well, yeah, of course. I mean, what's the big deal?
We have miracles all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's just normal.
We're going to be back in just a moment with the second half hour of our fascinating program with Mr. Carl Lawrence. Well, this is Dr. Stan here.